Welcome, listeners. You're listening to Voices from the Frontlines. This is Manuel Criollo. I'm your host for today's show. Eric Mann is out in Miami trying to build a movement, and we are all fresh coming from Jackson, Mississippi, where many of us gathered, where hundreds, if not thousands of people came to Jackson, Mississippi to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer in Mississippi. And today's show we're going to dedicate to this incredible moment that both conference that many of us lived, but more importantly as a moment for reflection for many people in the movement. We will be joined early on in the show by Vivian Rothstein, who is a leader with Lane and was also a brigadista, a brigade person of SNCC and CORE, who went out to Mississippi in 1965. And we will also be joined in the second half of the show by Jonathan Stiff. He is the national coordinator of the Alliance for Educational Justice, talking about the Youth Congress that happened at the same time as the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Mississippi Summer. I hope everyone is doing well out there. You know, I just fresh coming back from Jackson, Mississippi, where I spent the last week out in Mississippi with many of the celebrations and commemorations of 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. And before we get into some of our guests, I wanted to talk about three things that really impressed me and I've been sort of mulling over the last week. You know, the first thing, to imagine that on June 21st, three of their important leaders of SNCC had been abducted, and many people assumed that they were probably dead, and that, you know, hundreds of young people, and that many of the local grassroots leaders in the Black community in Mississippi who took the risk of taking these young people in, it really made me think a lot about, one, the need for us to think about our movement and our sort of quest for social justice as a spiritual move, that in many ways, I've always heard Eric Mann speak about this, about the necessity of looking at our work as a spiritual calling. And in many ways, I've been dedicating the last 20 years to that. But being in Mississippi and hearing from, you know, now we're looking at young people who at that time were maybe 20, 21, 22, 23, 18, now are in their 70s. And many of them are doing incredible, amazing work. And I really felt the groundedness of a spiritual calling that many had. And obviously, on one hand, you had a lot of the important Black culture of, you know, Christianity and spirituality that was there in front of our eyes that obviously made it seem like a revival. But you almost sense that people were in a spiritual crusade. And in many ways, it seems that we as a movement need to figure out, can we have that kind of spirit of spiritual revival and spiritual, you know, necessity for redemption of many of the ills that face society as we have. The second is that, you know, while much of the conversation about Freedom Summer focuses a lot on people who went from the North or the West, or even from schools in the South, young people, and went to Mississippi to support much of the grassroots organizing to try to confront white supremacy, confront the many, many aspects of how the undermining of the Black community played out. It was also important to understand, for me, the groundedness of a much broader struggle and the continuum struggle in many ways. While obviously an important watershed moment, not only for Mississippi and in the country, that in reality, you know, it was really everyday people who took both the courage to bring in the young people and bringing them and inviting them to their, into their communities to work hand in hand to try to transform, you know, a pretty oppressive society that killed hundreds of people who, you know, Mississippi had, you know, when we were there, they talked about, I don't know, over something about 500 people who had been lynched after emancipation. And that the profound aspect of how everyday people took action on something as simple as bringing somebody in, which could have meant your life, could have meant the losing of your job, could have meant the whole your whole livelihood within the community being in danger. And the third thing to me was the importance that many of these people who went to Mississippi, it was so transformative that you can see a continuum of their own work in their day-to-day work. Some of them are professors, some of them are judges, some of them are organizers, Some of them are doctors, but the profound impact that it had. And I think it goes back to the concept of our ability to understand that we are seeking to be something bigger than we are. And in Mississippi, that's what they found. And I think as many in the movement have to begin to think ourselves much more bigger than it's about us or one particular victory, but more importantly, the broader sense of what it is. So, you know, with that all said, I wanted to, you know, I was in the one of the main plenaries on maybe the second day, and I saw Vivian Rothstein, who's a longtime and founder of Los Angeles New Economic for here in Los Angeles with Lane, and I wanted to invite her because we got to talk about her own experience in Mississippi and wanted to bring her own impression. So, welcome to the show, Vivian.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So, Vivian, when did you go to Mississippi your first time, and what led you to that decisive decision to go in a place that I really question myself, would I have been brave enough to have done it myself?
Well, in 1964, I was a student at Berkeley. I had gone to Hollywood High School and graduated and got a scholarship to go to Berkeley, and it was a huge honor. I was part of the first generation of my family to go to college. And when I arrived in Berkeley, I very quickly got involved in the civil rights movement in Berkeley that was recruiting students and training us in nonviolent civil disobedience and organizing protests at various employers in the Bay Area, including the Sheraton Hotel and on Auto Row at the auto dealerships, at Lucky Food Stores. And so I got trained in the practice of nonviolent civil disobedience, and when I turned 18, I participated in a civil disobedience demonstration in San Francisco, and there were several hundred community members and students that were arrested. So in the summer of 1964, I was in court. There were hundreds of us that were tried in groups of 10, and we were in court throughout the summer, charged with disturbing the peace, failure to disperse, and trespassing. And in the course of being defended by volunteer civil rights lawyers, we learned about the history of nonviolent resistance in the United States. And we heard about what was going on in Mississippi. So as soon as I was finished with the court trials and finished the next year of school, I was recruited and volunteered to go down to Mississippi in 1965. It seemed at that time that Mississippi was the most dangerous place, that the organizers and the students and the local leaders needed people there to witness what was going on and to shine a light on the abuses that were going on in Mississippi. And by going there as young people from the North, we could take the attention of our families and our communities to the state of Mississippi. And that's what we did.
And where did you stay? How long were you out there for?
I was there about 4 months. The very first thing that happened is we all got arrested in a demonstration, and for 11 days there were about 500 people that were incarcerated. I mean, we were all segregated by gender and by race. So as a white woman, I was in the Hinds County Jail, and the black men, the black women, and the white men, all separated, were in the county fairgrounds. And they were on the ground there for 11 days. And eventually the charges were thrown out because the civil rights movement wasn't able to get a permit to demonstrate. And so we were arrested for demonstrating without a permit. And it was a suppression of our free speech rights. And none of us would take bail. So we were finally released. And then I was sent to Leake County, which is a rural county right next to Neshoba County. And I lived with the Wilder family on Red Dog Road, which was an unpaved road where there was no plumbing, no electricity, no phone lines. All of those stopped at where the white community ended. And so I was housed and really protected by the Wilders. There are a number of households of Wilders that lived on Red Dog Road. And we ran a freedom school. We tried to help people to register to vote. And we went door to door to try to find people who were willing to have their children try to integrate the all-white public schools. Because at that time, there were two separate public school systems in Mississippi, an all-white system that was completely underfunded and undersupplied, and an all-white system that had new schools, new books, and much more funding. So those were the three projects that I worked on.
I know there's been a set of many commemorations over the last decade in relationship to many of the sort of watershed moments of the civil rights movement. 50 years later, what were you hoping to see and accomplish?
Well, I had gone back to the 30th reunion 20 years ago, and at that reunion, Aaron Henry was still alive, who was one of the major local leaders in Mississippi, and he told all of us, go out to the rural, go find the families that housed you, see how they're doing, make that connection. And so many of us went out, and I was able to find the Wilder family and Red Dog Road and hear what improvements had been made, but still see how poor people were. But it was just a wonderful personal connection. But this year, being 50 years later, I knew that most of those people had passed. And I didn't really know what to expect from this reunion. I knew it was going to be much bigger, that it was going to have this great Youth Congress component. I guess 450 young people came who are politically active and are engaged and energized. And I didn't really know what it was going to be like. But it had just what you mentioned in your comments. It had the spiritual component of the early civil rights movement of the 1960s that is rooted in the black experience in Mississippi and in the black church, and really unites people in a quest for justice in a very profound and very emotional way. And this conference, through the plenaries and the speeches and the film festival and the workshops, it still communicated that very personal sense of connection, of spiritual connection to the work and to each other, which I think is one of the amazing things about the Southern Civil Rights Movement.
We're speaking to Vivian Rothstein, longtime organizer and social activist, and we had the great fortune of running into each other in Jackson, Mississippi at the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer that just ended this past Sunday. Throughout the week in Jackson, and as Vivian said, easily 1,000 people came and went for a whole week to a set of activities, everything from obviously reminiscing and understanding and deeply rooting ourselves in the history of not just how 1964 happened, but even deeper in relationship to the struggle for freedom in Mississippi and throughout the South and the United States. And I had the great fortune of going with a delegation from the Strategy Center, where you had obviously Eric Mann, Ashley Franklin, Delano Washington, Woodrow Coleman, and Julian Lamb, who we were able to at least live a moment. We had a lot of goals. One goal was to be able to record many of the important leaders and veterans of the 64 campaign. And I know pretty much a lot of people who've been listening to KPFK have had the chance to hear some of those pieces that were produced by Julian Lamb and obviously directed by Eric, doing many of those interviews. And myself and Ashley and Delana were able to be part of a lot of the activities in the Youth Congress itself to be able to talk about it. What does the Freedom Summer mean to us today? Vivian, you're a long-term runner, because many people are not those long-term runners. And do you feel like, I know this sounds like a rhetorical question, but how much did Mississippi in and by itself had the impact for you to find the fuel to be running this long?
Well, I think Mississippi was extremely important for me and for so many other people to give us the courage that we really learned from the local people in Mississippi, as you said, who had been active and had a movement for so many years. One of the people at the conference said, Mississippi Freedom Summer had no beginning and no end, that really it started when slaves were brought to the United States and people started resistance, and it continues. It's part of a continuum that's going to go into the future. But I think I could see the wisdom of ordinary people in knowing what they wanted for themselves and for their communities, and the extraordinary courage they had to face up to really state-sponsored terrorism and violence and threats And I think it it gave me my own personal, helped me with my own personal commitment, and also the joy of being part of a movement, a righteous movement that's trying to do the right thing. There is just something very special about it. So I learned really from Mississippi Freedom Summer about the role of an organizer and how important organizers are to helping communities find their voice, and it just inspired me to do this as my life's calling, and it fit my own personal inclinations. And you know, there was a moment, I don't know if you were there, when people were asked to come up and testify in the Baptist tradition, to testify about what their life has been like since the Freedom Summer movement. And there must have been 250, 300 people, local people and volunteers, that talked about what they've been doing. And people have been really keeping on. You know, they're still active. They're still trying to make the world a better place. And I found that very inspiring and kind of spoke to the power of that experience.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I, you know, one of those that will be a very impressionable moment for myself, right? You had, you know, literally some people with walkers, some people with canes, but almost everybody spoke with such deep passion and compassion in their voice, with a lot of feel of both pride and dignity about what they've been able to accomplish and how much it transformed them, how much credit that they gave to the local leaders in a way that, as you're saying, to find both your own voice and your own sort of conscious and imagining that while many of the people who went down to Mississippi were sacrificing a lot, is to imagine how much they were themselves sacrificing, how much they gave to build this much grander sort of vision of how they wanted to improve their lives and the lives of their community. To me, just make me think about, hopefully, how do we keep ourselves in that same tradition? Because the other thing about that many of the speakers talked about was, how do we maintain that arc? And that I'm trying to remember one of the speakers speaking about the necessity to see ourselves as almost every breath that we take, every piece of work that we're moving, is to continue that legacy of many of the people who are no longer with us.
And I remember one of the powerful messages, too, was the role of music.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom singers were there singing the songs, you know, that kept the freedom movement going. And I think for us now and for all movements, you really need the inspiration of a transcendent experience, like singing together and, you know, kind of shouting out or singing out what your hopes are and what your dreams are to keep you going. And that was a very powerful part of the movement, and something that we could work much harder to incorporate into current social change efforts.
Yeah, we're speaking to Vivian Rothstein here from Los Angeles, who herself and many people headed down to Jackson, Mississippi for Mississippi Freedom Summer. And it's 50th anniversary. You listen to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, and kpfk.org. And you're listening to Voices from the Front Lines. Well, the other thing that I thought was important, Vivian, was that the conversation was also very forward speaking. While obviously there's no high level of unity that I could only assume maybe 50 years ago about what the particular goals, we did speak a lot about the great set of challenges that the community faces, everything from voter IDs and the intimidation of voters, the loss of many of the important gains that were made around voting rights. The issue around the privatization of education seemed to be like a very important issue. You know, obviously the work that, you know, I've been working a lot for, along with many other people in the city and across the state, around the school to prison pipeline, you know, the criminal justice system, the issue of 1 million people in prison, to a certain degree, the environment, and just generally, what is the state of the black community? I mean, in your viewpoint, are those maybe the main places where you feel like we could find some level of unity to discuss, no matter where in the spectrum of where we're at on that question, on those questions?
Well, it did seem like some of the advances of that movement have been reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really upsetting. And it was great that the half of every day was really about looking forward and not looking back. But what struck me the most were the losses on the voter rights front, mm-hmm. where because of the congressional delegation from Mississippi being all white except for Representative Benny Thompson, mm-hmm. the state has been gerrymandered, and now with the loss of any federal oversight of changes to federal districts, that's going to get worse. And they mentioned that Benny is the one Democrat and the one African American in the Mississippi delegation, and there's one African American and one Democrat, the same person in the Louisiana delegation, the Alabama delegation, the Georgia delegation. That's really a step back from where it's been in the past. It's worse now than it's been. And then, as you mentioned, in education, we worked so hard to integrate the public schools, the white public schools. Now the schools are 100% African American, and whites go to private Christian schools. So in those two areas, they're huge, huge challenges. And Mississippi is always at the bottom of the heap.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Moses said Mississippi's always tried to be a law unto itself, you know, a state separate from the federal government, exercising the worst racism and the worst segregation. And it's still, there's many improvements, but there's still a lot of really bad structural challenges in Mississippi today. So I was very encouraged by the range of people who came to the reunion and the way it was organized to inspire people to work now on these very current challenges. At the same time that people could treasure the history of the movement and could bring it back to life.
Yeah, you know, Vivian, we went with obviously both Eric went and also Woodrow Coleman, who's been a longtime member of the Bus Riders Union and the Strategy Center, and both of them obviously had their own set of work in the civil rights movement, especially in Eric's case in the North and Woodrow here in Los Angeles. And you know, while I've had a lot of times to talk to Woodrow about much of the experience that he's had in his own lifetime and how important he was to the movement here in Los Angeles, it was one of those things where his, you know, stories that he hadn't even told us came even more back to life, I guess, in the moment as he was able to both, I think, maybe relive that moment. It also gave us the possibility of even having much more profound conversations about his own experiences, and I think the ability for us to imagine that people can give a whole lifetime in seeking justice, at least for, I don't consider myself no longer a young person, but but a person who's at least had some work, but I know more young people that are younger than myself, is hoping that all of us can find that same important sort of spiritual revival that I think you also spoke to be able to face many of the challenges that we have and hopefully have the courage to not only do the work, but hopefully also provide people with a new vision about what's in front of us and what are the challenges. So I really want to thank you for being on with us today and sort of giving us a good breakdown of what happened at the conference. And thank you again for your own work, because I know the spectrum of your work did not stop in the 60s. And obviously the important work that Lane has done for the city, you can only imagine how the continuum of that history has been at the critical core of that.
Well, I want to thank you for inviting me on. And I want to say that the presence of young people at this reunion was the most inspiring thing for those of us who are kind of old, because there was just great energy and just a range of people from different places and backgrounds, and that was really, and all of you looking forward and seeing yourselves as part of this continuum of change was very exciting for all of us. So thank you for being there.
Well, thank you. So folks, we've been hearing a real living legend with Vivian Rothstein on the phone, who was in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, for Freedom Summer. Today, we've dedicated the whole show to the conversation about the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Freedom Summer, led by SNCC, but obviously embraced by many in the civil rights movement of the and Black Freedom movement in the 60s, where you had hundreds of young people from across the country come into Mississippi to support the important work that many of the Black leadership and community members had been engaged for 20, 30 years, much of what many of us don't hear. But in many ways, many of us who went, which was probably at least, I know, 1,000, because I know at least 400 to 500 young people from across the country were also present. I have as a guest here is a important person from our delegation, from which is Julian Lamb. Julian, who has been an important producer for Voices from the Frontlines. Him and Eric had an incredible journey of trying to seek out many of the important leaders of that time period to seek their, you know, their advice, to seek their impressions, their interpretation of the world, their interpretation of history. Julian, how was it doing that? I had a chance to talk to some of the elders, try to take selfies with them, and, you know, I asked Ashley and Delana and Woodrow to pose with people, you know, but in some ways, relatively superficial. How was it that you guys, I know, and some of these interviews lasted half hour, an hour. How was it being there with them and living that interview?
Well, yes, Manuel, and before I address that question, first let me say hi to the Voices listeners, and I'd like to give thanks to Dr. Beverly Hogan of Tougaloo College. As you know, Manuel, Tougaloo College hosted Mississippi Freedom mm-hmm. Summer, and Dr. Hogan was very helpful with assisting us at the Labor Community Strategy Center, as well as KPFK, in our efforts to talk to many of the civil rights veterans that we did talk to. And so, and historically, Tougaloo College served an important role during the civil rights movement of the 1960s, in which it was a place of refuge and safety for the organizers to conduct their meetings and their workshops and so forth. So I just like to say that. As far as the interviews, we were able to talk to several of the civil rights veterans, individuals who played significant roles in the shape and the form of how the movement would look. For example, we were able to talk to Hollis Watkins. He is a civil rights veteran who helped unseat the regular Mississippi delegation. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot from Mr. Watkins.
And he was the chair of the whole actual conference.
Yes, he was.
Also,
yes, he was actually the chair of the Mississippi Freedom Summer. We also were able to speak with John O'Neill. He's an actor, producer, / activist. Hmm. And he formed the Free Southern Theater in 1963, and this was the educational and cultural arm of the civil rights movement. In addition to that, we also interviewed Dorothy Zellner, and she was a co-editor of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee newsletter, and this newsletter was called The Student's Voices. She helped crafted many of the organization's messages and report on stories that the mainstream would suppress. And so she played a significant role in getting the message out to the people of Mississippi at that time. Also, we spoke to Bob Zellner. Mm. He's a civil rights foot soldier. And Bob's story is really interesting. He was born in a family. His fathers, his uncles, his brothers, robe-wearing members of the Ku Klux Klan. Mm. And Bob's life took a turn when his father went to Europe to help in the struggle mm-hmm. against Nazi mm-hmm. occupation and persecution of the Jews. And when his father returned, during that time in Europe, his father ran into a group of Blacks who were also helping in the struggle against Nazism. And it changed his experience and views as far as Blacks and what he was taught. And so when he came back, he was a different man, and he decided not to raise his son in that manner. And Bob was a member of SNCC, and he played a significant role in the movement at the time. And also, in addition to that, we spoke with Mike Sayer and Leroy Johnson of the NAACP, or excuse me, Derek Johnson of mm-hmm. the president of the NAACP, and Leroy Johnson of mm-hmm. Southern Echo. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting experience for me. I enjoyed the conversations that I had. There was many stories that you wouldn't get in mainstream history books. Mm-hmm. And so I was very grateful that I was able to firsthand learn from these people, from the people who were actually there, who actually participated in the struggle, and just to gain firsthand information to hear it from them themselves as to what the struggle was like and what the various cost of it all was to these various individuals, mm-hmm. because it was a sacrifice for many of these people who went down there. It wasn't just, hey, let's go down there, it's a big party, mm-hmm. going on. This was serious. People lost their lives, and it was a very tumultuous time, mm-hmm. in society, and they were brave soldiers who participated, mm-hmm. in that.
Well, you know, I think one of the a lot of things that we, you know, been talking about in Community Rights Campaign has been this concept of menticide, that many times all our history, not only has it been rewritten, there's been revisions to it, if that was bad alone, it's also been completely wiped. And that I think that the work that you and Eric both have been doing in trying to capture a much more sort of hopefully honest and profound sort of dialogue between organizers, to me, hopefully that people enjoyed them throughout, you know, the past week. And, you know, on the flip side, right, I don't think people can comprehend how profound the work that you do, because you have to clean it up. You know, you got to take out the ums and, you know,
yes.
Everybody's listening to Eric Mann, those on the air, and a lot of the important things. But so, you know, I really want to thank you for that, because I do think, I know that while I did have fun after the conference, you know, you were in your room trying to clean up these sort of important documents. And I know we were talking about having a more set of conversations about what we could do with them.
Yes.
Outside of doing that project, what other sort of things came up for you in the conference?
Well, in one of the conference specifically, I remember, I've heard this concept before as far as the statement from cradle to prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that statement before, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, it may have been you who I heard it from. Mm-hmm. But at one of the conference, I heard it again, and it just struck me in a different way. It seems to struck me in a way that it threw me aback, and it kind of opened my eyes to how serious and how profound the attack is against Black and Brown within our community, that they're starting at a very, very early, early age. And the earlier it is for them, the better it is for them, the worse it is for us. And so, yeah, that was one of the things that stood out the most for me at that conference was, I mean, after I heard that, it circulated in my mind for a really long time. It's still circulating in my mind. I'm wrapping my mind around it and seeing what that looks like and what we can do to address that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I wish I could take credit. I know it's, I think you heard it from Marion Wright Edelman at the conference itself,
okay.
from the Children's Defense Fund. But yeah, I do think that the profoundness of, and I know we talked about it, the deepness of when we think about from the cradle to the grave, really, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you want to take it even more profound about the set of structural dilemmas and harsh life that young children, Black and Brown, particularly Black, face in this country. Mm-hmm. And I think going back to what Vivian talked about, the challenges that still confront us,
yes.
the necessity for us to do a lot of work. And but really, I want to thank you and Eric to a magnificent seat of conversations that hopefully, I know we're trying to figure out what we're going to do next. Next, we have Jonathan Stiff. He's the national coordinator of the Alliance for Educational Justice. The Alliance is an alliance of community groups and youth groups across the country that have been working around issues around educational justice, school-to-prison pipeline, and many of the issues that school funding. And Jonathan was able to help bring roughly about 300 young people to the state of Mississippi to relive the history of not only the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Summer, but more importantly, to reactivate a whole new young group of base, both in Mississippi and across the country. So welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Jonathan, why don't you first give us a breakdown of what is the Alliance for Educational Justice and, you know, what brought you to Mississippi?
Sure. The Alliance, the AJ, the Alliance for Educational Justice, is a 29-member network, National Alliance of Youth and Intergenerational Groups who've come together to forward a vision of education justice, one that prepares all students for college, career, and community. And so we mobilized 300 of our Youth Justice Corps members to come to Mississippi to really demonstrate and show up as the face of youth organizing 50 years later. I think one of the things that we can look at Freedom Summer is kind of the first emergence or reemergence of youth organizing, and we wanted to show up 50 years later and say this is the face and these are issues.
And what to tell us about how did the what was y'all's involvement in the Youth Congress? What was trying to achieve? And I mean, we'll come back then. Did you think those were achieved?
So our involvement in the Youth Congress was not only bringing folk out, but also leading workshops on a lot of the issues that young people have been organizing around for the past decade. For us, I think the vision behind the Youth Congress was a bold and really daring attempt to recenter our politics and our community struggles and deepen democracy and extend it to young people of color who are find themselves at the brunt of the attack in this country and coming up and using strategies that we've learned from other liberation movements and other struggles across the country, particularly the global South, with the people's movement as an engine to drive social change and movement building in the United States, and really understanding that in a local context is that was part of the engine that drove the machine that got the late great Mayor Chokwe Lumumba into office, and also part of what we used to be the catalyst for Jackson Rising, and also a tool that we can use to build this country.
We're speaking to Jonathan Stiff. He's the National Coordinator of the Alliance for Educational Justice. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer and the Youth Congress that happened. You know, the Youth Congress brought, I don't know, probably several hundred young people from across the country. So Alliance for Educational Justice, the Young People's Project in Mississippi, groups like the Dream Defenders who sort of emerged out of the struggles around Trayvon Martin, and many students across the country who were there to not only relive and learn and embrace the long tradition of struggle in Mississippi, but more importantly, that we're also able to do important exchanges with young people on the ground, but also to try to rearticulate what are some of the challenges that folks faced. And I think, Jonathan, that's great that you added also the other context, because myself and Ashley Franklin from the Strategy Center, and I know you were there also, you know, just a month ago we were in Mississippi also with the important sort of Jackson Rising, a lot of important work that's happening in Mississippi and in Jackson that is makes it feel like at least it's forcing us to have a real engagement to where we want to go and what we're doing. Why don't we talk about what did young people do? Were you guys able to go out in the fields? Were you guys able to talk to people on the ground? What kind of exchanges you guys had with young people in Mississippi?
Well, the part of also what we came down to do was also put in work. And so in Mississippi, there's currently the Better Schools, Better Jobs Initiative, which is a ballot initiative that will generate new revenue funding and produce funding equity in the state of Mississippi. And so we came there to learn about the ballot initiative and then also participate in it, as well as learn from it so that folk can take it back. The issue of funding equity is one that is shared across most states and cities where young people were coming from. And also we see it as a federal issue that needs to be resolved, and a clear indicator and part of the school to prison pipeline.
And Jonathan, one of the things that that we sensed that that was very powerful for everybody was you had, you know, people as old, probably, I don't want to age people, but probably some people like in their late 70s, and to obviously many of the people that you guys were bringing out, I mean, as young as 13, in your sense of what feedback you got from the young people, what do you think that meant for them in both having the ability to have that exchange and at the same time, what kind of commitment in their own mind about the struggle would mean?
I think one of the most touching moments was when we took, because we couldn't do the ballot initiative because it was raining, uncharacteristic of Jackson, it rained the 3 days that we were supposed to be doing ballot initiative. So we linked up with some about 50 young people in Mississippi and did some focus groups and really talking and sharing issues. And for young people from across the country, they began to really realize that Mississippi is in their state, and that 50 years ago, Mississippi was the front of or this the symbol of everything that was wrong with America, and now we can find Mississippi in every part of the country, from New York to Los Angeles. And so I think they took away with that, and a renewed sense that was one, and that we really need to build a movement if we're going to change the conditions facing young people.
We're talking to Jonathan Stiff, and you're listening to Voices from the Frontlines here on KPFK 90.7 FM and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara and KPFK.org. We've been exchanging with people who were in Jackson, Mississippi this past week, talking about the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Freedom Summer, but it also is the Civil Rights Act this year, around the same time. You know, Jonathan, this year has been such an important key year of a lot of sort of milestone watershed moments in relationship to the struggle of education and racism. This is the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board. This is the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer, the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Next year will be the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And, you know, in talking to Vivian, while there's many sort of outwardly, we would say there's been a lot of important gains, at least from an outside perspective of what happened maybe 50 years ago or 100 years ago. The reality is that the struggle against white supremacy and racism continues in front of our face. When we talk about this issue around education here in California, there was an important passage of important new funding that would come into our schools to serve low-income, foster care youth, English learners. And yet, here in Los Angeles, while there was a lot of important money that went into things like counselors and restorative justice, at the same time, LAUSD made a decision to use some of that money for the police. You look at the privatization of schools. You know, I went to a lot of panels at the conference talking about this struggle that's happening in New Orleans, where not only were we talking about there's virtually no longer public schools in New Orleans, but that a whole both black families, black students, and black teachers have been sort of priced out to sort of like a market-based set of solutions. How do we comprehend both our own work in this time period when the attacks seem as profound, but in many ways, none of that outrage that exists outside of people who are really doing work on the ground?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that when we understand what happened 50 years ago or 60 years ago with Brown versus Board, and then 50 years ago with Freedom Summer, education still remains like a lightning rod issue for our communities. And I think that's one place where we can see where struggle starts and it spreads to the wider community. And so you're absolutely right. The attacks are really profound. And part of AJ coming to Mississippi was coming with a larger collective, a group called the Freedom Side, that included the Dream Defenders and the Ohio Student Association and United We Dream. And really this idea, and really all of us came together around the verdict around George Zimmerman and the assassination of Trayvon Martin. And I always remember when we were sitting in a hotel in Chicago when a verdict came out with some AJ young people. There was a young person from Miami, a young lady named Keisha, and she told the story of Trayvon from that level, that he had been suspended three times and his mom had sent him to his dad, where he eventually encountered George Zimmerman because she didn't know what else to do, and he had been pushed out of school. And so for me, it was a real tangible moment around how the school-to-prison pipeline really has an effect beyond schools and really is setting up young people in some really catastrophic ways. Even when we look at Chicago and the school closings there and the death of Dorian Albert, as well as in Philadelphia with the death of LaPortia Massey as a result of not having nurses, we can see that. And I do wonder, you know, what will it take? And we could see that, you know, years ago with the bombing of Birmingham church and killing of those four girls as a lightning rod. So I don't know what it's going to take for us to really wake up. But young people are awake, and they're out, and they're in the streets and in the hallways organizing and, you know, fighting for the end of a school-to-prison pipeline and this ideal of education justice.
We're speaking to Jonathan Stiff. He is the National Coordinator of the Alliance for Educational Justice, giving us the sort of lowdown of the important youth congress that happened at Jackson, Mississippi for in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. And Jonathan, you know, again, in talking to Vivian, and, you know, obviously also it's the lived experience that I had, you know, while, you know, I think that much of what has driven me in my own life has been my own life experiences and articulating it within a broader struggle of my people. I felt a pretty profound, I don't know, calling or spiritual revival that I felt. It could have been the Freedom Choir. It could have been seeing people who got shot at, who got exploded. And for me, it was very profound in that way. And yet, obviously, I temper that with much of the challenge of, can any of us fully comprehend what people felt in that moment and the sacrifices that, as Julian was speaking earlier, the sacrifices that many people do, when I feel people in my own generation or even younger, are we willing to do that kind of sacrifice?
Yeah, that's a great point. I was reflecting on the same thing, and I was thinking about Kwame Ture, who, interestingly enough, was one of the folk who didn't necessarily get a mention at the 50th anniversary. And he talked about how at that time it felt like they just got a most vulnerable enemy, and that they had come out of a stage where, you know, 10 years before they were lynching black people and folk openly. And so they felt they had an opening to step more boldly, because at least they weren't going to lynch us. And obviously they met more resistance than they had anticipated, but they saw an opening there. I think that as we move forward and the conditions manifest themselves, I think you will see young people taking bolder and bolder steps towards this idea of education justice. And I think, again, being on the ground and feeling that revival, I can't help but think that with Summer Chokwe there and his spirit still being alive and amongst the people, moving us and encouraging us to take the leap, the great leap forward.
No, for sure. And I think that has been, I think, part of my revival that I have to sort of center, that I was there only a month ago, where the chant of free the land by any means necessary, the long trajectory of struggle that happened, it has happened in Mississippi, and that from this important sort of commemoration, I think the challenge, and it's very exciting that yourself and the other groups that were in part of trying to move forward the freedom side and the conversations about our own set of freedom summers, we really do need to, people in the movement need to really think about, what is that kind of sacrifice? What is that kind of push for us to be able to build the type of movements that we need to bring true justice, to bring true ending to racism and white supremacy? And I really want to thank you for the work that you've done and all the folks that helped organize the Youth Congress. I want to thank today's guests. We had Vivian Rothstein, a delegate to the conference this week, and also a member of Lane, a leader of Lane. I also want to thank Julian Lamb. Next week, Eric Mann will be back on Voices from the Frontlines. This is Manuel Criollo. Thanks for having us. Little darling.